Mike, can you do the little intro bumper in a spooky horror voice?
Ooh, sure I can.
Do you know how the intro bumper goes?
Rock out with your library.
Say, this is the Popmatic Podcast.
This is the Popmatic Podcast for October 29th. For October 29th, 2014. This time to rock out with your library card out. Something about gum.
This is so much fun.
Spooktacular celebration of all things goth.
So the rock out with your library card out comes after the little bumper, but you did excellent. But that is right, ghosts and ghouls.
Thank you.
That's right, ghosts and ghouls and other
children of the night.
And other pasty face types. This is the Popmatic Podcast. That includes most librarians, I guess, right?
I was about to say.
This is the Popmatic Podcast where you can...
I was about to say.
Where you can rock out with your black laced covered library card out. Last time I looked in a mirror, I was Brian. And joining me today are...
Bale.
Mike.
Crystal.
And I think Amanda was too scared to be on the show today. In honor of all...
She's stuffing the cone downstairs.
In honor of All Hallows Eve, this is our goth episode. Get sad. Get scary. It's probably appropriate that Crystal goes first because she's probably the gothest person here. Do you, you gonna contest that?
No.
Okay.
I would like to go on the record to say that although I'm not a true goth, I do share similar interests. I'm obsessed with Cats, not the musical. My phone features a Joy Division song as a ringtone. And... I'd leave my sweetie in a heartbeat if Robert Smith suddenly came to Nashville asking for my hand in marriage. All right, now that that's out of the way, let me tell you about a film that both goths, and if I may borrow a Harry Potter term, muggles, will enjoy. Only Lovers Left Alive, the 2013 film written and directed by Jim Jarmusch, is the story of Adam and Eve. Two centuries-old vampire lovers, played by Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston, who are currently loving each other from afar. Adam lives in Detroit. Eve resides in Tangier, two cities broken down with decay and neglect, yet on the verge of rebirth.
1868, the third wedding. You look so young.
Give my regards to that suicidally romantic scoundrel.
Well, let's hope he's just romantic.
You being so reclusive in everything is probably only going to make people more interested in your music.
Yeah. What a drag.
Shouldn't she be sleeping in a coffin somewhere?
I'm really, really hungry.
Could you smell it all the way from LA?
We're gonna have so much fun together.
We gotta go. Right now. Coming.
Is that the really good stuff?
Precisely.
Typo.
I protect his secret in your soul.
Shh.
for so long and still not get it. You've been pretty lucky in love, though, if I may say so.
I have what you need.
Not what I need.
The opening scene of the film is mesmerizing as the camera hovers above and circles around Adam and Eve in their separate dwellings as the music, Wanda Jackson's Funnel of Love, intoxicates the viewer's ears to the point you're more than ready to stick your neck out for Nosferatu. Adam is a tortured, creative, vampiric soul, living as a recluse musician, composing haunting ambient music in his home studio. His Renfield, a young stoner named Ian, buys him vintage guitars and whatever else Adam may need. His latest order includes a wooden bullet. You can guess what he has in mind for himself. Now, on the other side of Earth, in Tangier, Eve spends her time reading and talking with her mentor, Philip Marlowe, played by John Hurt. Eve is indignant that Marlowe has yet to receive credit for his great literary works. Jarmusch must be in the Shakespeare was a fraud camp. Later, Eve Skypes Adam, and during their conversation, it becomes quite clear to her that he is increasingly despondent, distressed by the zombies, that's us humans, who are destroying the planet. She decides he needs a visit to cheer him up, so she books a night flight to Paris and a night flight to Detroit, packing all her favorite books for the journey. Now, there's not a lot of action in this movie. Rather, many great conversations about life and art and science and music and love. Mia Wasikowska, I never can say her last name right, she appears as Eve's bratty and selfish sister. The cities of Detroit and Tangier are Oscar-worthy supporting cast members who are complex and dangerous and breathtaking. I could go on and on, but everyone's pointing to their respective timepieces. Let me just say that when Adam and Eve reunite, that's just about the sexiest thing I have ever seen. All right, Bill?
Wait, I'm not letting you off the hook.
I think Christopher Marlowe, right?
Oh, I said Philip Marlowe.
Future correction.
I think that was a real-time, in-episode correction.
Yeah. There you go.
Christopher Marlowe, played by John Hurt. The only thing I didn't like about that movie is I wish that Tom, he's the name I can't get right.
Tom Hiddleston?
Tom Hiddleston. You know, he's just not as interesting to look at as Tilda Swinton. Like, she just has, like, a really cool look. Like, you can just look at her.
I really like that movie. I was surprised.
I think Jim Jarmusch is in love with her.
I don't know about Mr. Jarmusch, but I'm in love with her.
Yeah.
I'm in love with her character in that movie. She's so full of life, which is amazing because she's a vampire.
The undead.
And that's a metaphor, too. I think that she's in Tangier and he's in Detroit, right? So, you know, it's not his attitude towards humanity and where the world is going, right? It's like symbolic that he's in Detroit. But the other thing, too, is the Wanda Jackson song, the old Nashville connection here. It's not like that straight version of that song. It's like the screwed and chopped syrup raga version of that song, right? And do you know, like, if that's a song, like, someone actually put that song out, or did they remix the song for the movie?
That's a good question. I thought it was just straight up the Wanda Jackson song, but we don't have a recording of it available through the library or through Hoopla or Freegal, so I wasn't able to listen to other versions just to see, but...
Because when the camera's spinning, it's not like the... I mean, by the end of the scene, it's like the straight song.
Right.
But when the camera's spinning, it's not like... It's like this totally, like, bugged out, ambient, slowed down version. Yeah. I thought, anyway, maybe Wanda Jackson's way more experimental than I ever thought she was, right? Right? A trailbreaker in her own right, regardless.
Indeed.
But awesome final shot on that movie, too.
Yeah.
So great. And, you know... It's strange. I thought for sure, Mike, you were going to hate this movie. I thought you were going to be like, these vampires are a bunch of hipsters, and they don't kill any, and they don't kill anybody. They're a bunch of hipster vampires that don't kill anybody. What is this BS? So
Let's say I was warned about what kind of movies Jim Jarmusch makes before I got
slow
in.
Slow ones.
Yes.
Where nothing happens.
So, So I was like prepared for nothing to happen. And I mean, you know, I don't mind people talking in movies for the whole movie as long as it's something interesting. And I thought that, like, you know, their whole that's about, you know, life and immortality and music and all that stuff. What's kind of fun. So.
Apparently being a vampire just means being in college forever.
Yeah.
Oh, the luxury of not having to work.
My question is, I'm curious, where did y'all see it at? Did you see, what I want to know is, did you see it on the big screen or on the television?
That's on the Belcourt.
Belcourt.
I unfortunately saw it at home.
I saw it at home on my TV, but if I can be arrogant, not that I've ever asked for permission in the past, I would, being a cinema buff, I think that my home setup is probably more theatrical than some.
I just, when I saw it, it was a strange time. I saw it on a Sunday morning, and this was in the thick of summer, yeah. And one of like, it was like, they opened the theaters early because the big X-Men or whatever, and I thought, well, I'll go see that because it's going to be there at like, I think I saw it like 10:30 in the morning, seriously. And they had opened the theaters open.
Wow.
And lo and behold, it was in one of their big theaters. And I think I was the only one in the theater. And it just blew my mind. It was just great. It was one of those cinematic experiences that, you know, it was perfect for me. So I have on my top 10 list of the year because it just, the experience itself, I was sitting dead center and the movie just engulfed me.
Sure.
So it was fantastic the way I saw it. And, you know, it was kind of a strange time. That kind of movie's strange in the first place.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. Well, my turn, right?
Indeed, Bill.
I thought I'd start out by kind of defining goth. This is a Wikipedia definition. A member of a subculture favoring black clothing, white and black makeup, and goth music. Then there was the Urban Dictionary's definition, someone who likes the darker things of life. I approve this one better, the Urban Dictionary.
They like to
listen to death metal. Goths are fun to be around. Goths don't envy popular people. They see there are more important things to life than popularity. So when goth came up, the first thing that popped into my demented mind was the original goth girl. Get it? Morticia Adams, patriarch of the Adams family, which leads me to its creator, Charles Adams, or as I refer to him as the godfather of goth. Charles Adams was a cartoonist who was born on January 7th, 1912, Westfield, New Jersey. In Westfield, New Jersey was the Victorian's mansions that inspired his later work. Charles Adams loved to torment his grandmother, hang out in cemeteries. As a matter of fact, he was married in a pet cemetery. He was a collector of antique weapons and torture devices, and he loved parties. He once had a party with 250 of his friends at the New York Public Library with the Dixieland Band. Now you're saying, well, Bill, what's so goth or strange about that? Well, Charles Adams had died. So, we have a great book in the library. We have a great book in the library called The World of Charles Adams. The book features many of the original Adams Family cartoons with others that appeared in The New Yorker. It's highly entertaining. And if you want to know more about Charles Adams, Charles Adams, A Cartoonist's Life by Linda H. Davis, we also have. I haven't read the entire thing, but I did read some of it in preparation for today's podcast, and I really enjoyed it. Now, you may be asking, why don't you mention the TV show, movies, or Broadway play that was just here? We have the soundtrack in our collection. Well, because I want to get back to the basics with his original drawings. This is going to sound strange, but the original drawings of Charles Adams are less cartoony. They're more macabre. They're mundane. They have a matter-of-factness to them. Somebody said that about Charles Adams' drawings, and that's true. It kind of counterbalances the surrealism. Just once again, tip of the hat to Charles Adams, Charles Adams, A Cartoonist's Life by Linda H. Davis, and The World of Charles Adams, which features all his cartoons. So, Mike?
Yeah, I bought a book of his cartoons once, and it's amusing. Like, I thought it'd just be completely Adams Family. And instead, like, there was a lot of stuff that's kind of skewering the kind of conformity, the 50s suburban housewife kind of, you know.
Yeah, he loved to do that, especially husband and wife relationships.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Lockhorns, but with, like, you know, severed heads and stuff. while I do enjoy some gothy things, like a love of stylish black, which I'm not wearing today, future pop, which I mentioned in a previous podcast, everything being a lie and the only certainty is the cold embrace of death. I wouldn't really consider myself one. It was a bit tricky for me to think of something. You know, eventually I had to go to trusty Wikipedia. That I found out there that Beetlejuice, the 1988 film directed by Tim Burton, one of my favorite movies ever, is considered a film with gothic elements. And I was like, duh. I mean, it should have taken me quicker to remember that, oh yeah, everything Tim Burton makes is could be considered gothic, you know? I mean, even Big Fish has weird gothic elements. Beetlejuice is about a couple named Barbara and Adam Maitland, played by Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis, who discover to their great surprise that they're dead and they're haunting their vacation home. Soon after their death, a new family, the Dietzes, move into their house and totally remake it in a horrible style. They don't like the Maitlands don't like them at all. And they try to petition the bureaucracy of the Netherworld to remove them.
From the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Adam and Barbara are ghosts.
What's the good of being a ghost if you can't frighten people away?
Their house is being haunted by the living.
Maybe the house could use a little remodeling.
And they can't scare them into leaving.
They're dead. It's a little late to be neurotic.
So they're calling on Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Who's no ordinary ghost.
Yeah, you don't want his help.
Can you be scary?
What do you think of this?
Now, the party's over.
You put somebody out of the house, I want to get somebody out of your house.
But the fun has just begun.
It's showtime.
Learn to throw your voice, fool your friends, fun and party.
Not bad.
This is amazing.
You want a cigarette?
Oh, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah, here I come, baby.
He's guaranteed to put some life.
Attention, Game Workshoppers.
In your afterlife. Michael Keaton is Beetlejuice.
I'm the ghost with the most, babe.
But to no avail. They even have like a social worker. And apparently in the afterlife, you're only a social worker if you commit suicide. So like, I just found that a weird touch. Like, you know, you hate yourself, but you have to care about others. So they hire a professional living person exorcist named Beetlejuice, played masterfully by Michael Keaton.
Also starring in Birdman in a...
Oh, yeah.
Sort of a semi-reprisal of, Batman role.
Yeah, yeah. I keep reading interviews where it's all like, so what do you think about Batman? He's like, oh, I'm so tired of Batman. I'm like, Michael Keaton, what's wrong with you? Of course, the highlight of the film is where, at least, you know, for everybody, is where the Maitlands force the Dietzes to do a song and dance number to Harry Belafonte's Deo. Deo! You know, and they reach with, like, you know, shrimp-encrusted fingers and stuff. It's really great. I remember when I was a kid, and I wish it was on YouTube, so there's a kids talk show on Nickelodeon that had the props from Beetlejuice. Like, they had, like, the head. Like, there's a scene where, like, the Maitlands, like, try to make themselves more scary. So, like, he makes his nose really big and puts his hand through his head and all that kind of stuff. And she makes her jaw enlarge, and there's, like, eyeballs on her tongue. And they showed, like, these props on the kids show. And I was just like, I have to see this movie. This is the coolest movie I've ever seen. Oh, 80s, Mike.
So, time out. You haven't mentioned Winona Ryder.
I was just about to get there.
All right.
You read my mind with your horrifying psychic powers you just developed on Shocktober. Lydia Dietz, played by Winona Ryder, is supposed to be a goth. She's dressed in black, she's got pale skin, black hair, sunken eyes, and an obsession with death. This apparently gives her the ability to see the Maitlands, as live people seeing ghosts is considered strange and unusual. But she herself is strange and unusual. Although, for some reason, like, you know, every time I think of her, I think we're at the very end where she's got that bright red wedding dress, you know, the big hair. Very gloomy. But then towards the end, she gets, she's gloomy but likes life. Go figure. While scrolling through Wikipedia, I was amused to find that Tim Burton's original choice for Beetlejuice was Sammy Davis Jr.
Ah, interesting. Oh.
Which I guess would kind of go in the, you know, the weird music cues. Also, there's a script has been written by the guy who wrote Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter for Beetlejuice, the second movie.
Seth Graham Smith?
Smith.
Yeah. There's a whole thing on Wikipedia on the Beetlejuice entry, which is really great, on Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian, which was the original proposed sequel, where the Dietzes move to Hawaii and get haunted by a dead Hawaiian kahuna. and Beetlejuice gets in a surf contest. It sounds both awesome and terrible at the same time.
Yeah.
But that didn't get made. But this script apparently is so good that both Tim Burton and Michael Keaton have pretty much signed on after Tim Burton directs an adaptation of Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Anyway, what do you got, Brian?
I mention one thing about Beetlejuice, just to give a shout out? We have only one of his books, but it was written by Michael McDowell, who in the 80s wrote horror original paperback novels. It was kind of the rage. He passed away real young, age 39. Well, he wrote Tales of the Dark Side and things of this nature, and wanted to give him a shout out because he's kind of forgotten. We have one of his books that was finished. I can't remember the title, but Tabitha King finished it for him. He passed away of AIDS at the age of 39. Mm-hmm. But during the 80s, he was the writer of original paperback horror novels when that had a whole, like The Amulet. We don't have these, sadly.
In a spooky coincidence, I was just recommended him. Like his series about the Southern Gothic.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. The Floods, yeah.
That series. I love the covers. I looked them up online.
I looked out and found them all at the Belcourt down Hillsborough Village bookstore. Yeah. Every one of them.
Bookman.
They were all there.
Cool.
His books are really hard to find. They're just out of print. Yeah, I've got a few of them. Gilded Needles and The Amulet.
Radical.
Yes, it is.
So I'm just going to continue Mike's obsession with future pop and Winona Ryder.
Ooh, boy.
Well, I mean, just sexy. Like, when I was a kid, like, Beetlejuice is one of my favorite movies. I hate to date myself, but, like, weird.
Hey, I think we just did.
Like, weird imprinting of Winona Ryder, like, on my brain, you know? Doesn't go away. I can't make it go away. All right. But anyway, because I wanted to talk about a band, because I can remember one time, I'm probably going to date myself again, someone asked me, like, what do you think of when you think about goth? And I said, Human League. And they scoffed, and they were like, Human League? That's poppy crap. When I think about goth, I think about KMFDM.
Hey, cool. I know them. I have most of their discography.
But then I just felt old. I just felt old, right? But so I guess maybe I'm just more like spooky goth than like industrial goth. But today, I did want to talk about an industrial band, Youth Code. They're an industrial duo from Los Angeles. They're very old school, very EBM or electronic body music, very like strict minimal beats and like screaming distorted vocals. The beats are really, really kind of simple, sort of like how few parts can you have and still have a song. They've really been a breath of fresh air into sort of a tired scene. And here's a sample from this single, Tired Mask. So they're not really doing anything new, but I think like a lot of other artists in different genres, they sort of take a formula and reinvent it. Maybe like The Killers or Jack White or Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings or Raphael Sadiq. They're sort of taking this old style of music and just injecting new life into it. I love it. They're not uncontroversial. A lot of people in the industrial scene don't like them because they, even though they are goth and have tattoos, they're from Los Angeles and are good looking. So it's kind of like, oh, you guys are just posers, right? And I thought, I was going to say, like, they don't have street cred, but I think actually what I think they're missing for some people is cornfield cred, because it's like you're not like a teenage boy from the Midwest who like lives in a basement and plays Dungeons and Dragons all the time. So like that's just not cool if you're gonna make this like mean, sneering music. But then that's strange though, because there's this whole other thing to goth. There's sort of like the glam, like dance raver scene aspect of it too. But I think what Youth Code lacks and why some people don't like them is cornfield cred, right? They don't have any cornfield cred, right? They're just a little too cool and too good looking. I don't mind. I think this is just jealousy. I love Youth Code. They're exactly what I was waiting for, and I didn't know it yet until I heard them. Their record and Overture is on Freegal, and their new EP, A Place to Stand, is also on Freegal. And that's actually really cool that's on Freegal. That's on Dace Records, which is a super underground, really small press label. And Overture contains their first LP, which I believe was only released as an LP, and a 7-inch single that was only a 7-inch single on an even smaller label. Really good stuff. And A Place to Stand is four new songs with four remixes from other producers.
It's one thing I hate about music geekery is that they kind of like get all, well, you don't look like a metalhead. You don't look like a goth person, so, you know, you're not actually part of our tribe. It's like, you know, can I just listen to what I like and I don't have to, like, you know, conform.
This is where I am. I mean, as an industrial fan, like, I don't have no idea who's even listening to this music anymore. Like, you remember I told you on one episode, I was like, we should hang out after work because you liked VNV Nation.
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't like VNV Nation at all, actually, but I think it's cool that you've heard of them, right? Like, those sort of people, I've even heard of them. But speaking of VNV Nation and future pop, Youth Code have done something right because they got an opening slot on the Alliance of Sound Tour, which is basically the Industrial Monsters of Rock Tour. So the headliners are Hal Job, VNV Nation, and Skinny Puppy, three veteran industrial acts, probably the only three veteran industrial acts that I think have critical respectability. No offense to KMFDM.
No Front 242.
I think that they probably wanted to get Front 242, but in Europe, I think those guys still make enough money that it doesn't really matter. This is an American tour. And though I'm super duper happy for Youth Code that they got booked on such an awesome tour that will expose them, to, I think, to the right fan base, I feel bad for all those bands, except for Skinny Puppy, because the Skinny Puppy live experience is a life-changing experience. Right? You see Skinny Puppy live, you're transformed, it is amazing. The closest this tour is going to get to Nashville is...
Atlanta?
Is in Atlanta. So on December 6th at the Buckhead Theater, it'll be...
If you want to
make a road trip, it's actually probably worth it. Actually, Skinny Puppy live show is amazing theatrical experience.
Enjoy spending $20 on water.
it's worth going just for Skinny Puppy.
When years ago for Karen, she's my old supervisor, and this was at the old library, she wanted to order industrial music just to get a variety. And the first industrial group we got in here was Skinny Puppy.
And, you know, Halloween related, you know, the singer of Skinny Puppy that sort of does this sort of one-man horror show as a Skinny Puppy live show. He's actually a horror actor now. He's been in a couple movies.
Didn't Argento shoot a music video of theirs once? I think I saw that.
The video for their song Warlock was just the censored clips of horror movies that were censored in the United States.
Oh.
So like half of them were Argento movies. But of course they were the most like all the most violent and gory clips because there's the stuff that was censored, right?
Yeah.
So they made a video. It's funny too because a lot of like their official video compilations and stuff, sometimes it won't be in there because it's censored because it's made out of censored material, and then sometimes record labels and stuff have copyright concerns because it's actually, they didn't ask for permission or anything. They just took all the censored bits and just strung them together. For the song Warlock, which is maybe like the best song in the history of the universe. Someone asked me what is tickling my fancy. You can do it in a scary voice.
What's tickling your fancy, Brian?
What's tickling my fancy is the novel Wolf in White Van by John Darnell. I was sold on this book by my coworker Jesse's YouTube review of it. I love this book. It is tickling my fancy. I'm probably going to do... I just want to suggest maybe some counterpoints to Jesse's review. He said you don't have to be into gaming and D&D and fantasy literature to appreciate the book, and that is true. But I think if you do, you will like the book all that much more. It plays a big part in the book. Thanks to Greg, I am on, like, down this rabbit hole of gaming again. All kinds of games, board games, role-playing games, game system, games world, all aspects of it. So I'm loving this book, Wolf in White Van, about a professional gamer. You know, Jesse, in the videos, Ray said he was a prose snob and that the prose are really great in this book. And the prose are really good, but it's not written in an ornate literary style. It's written in the voice of the narrator, Sean. He's disfigured and he lives alone and he makes a living by playing play-by-mail role-playing games. So you're really inside his head and it's a very unique voice. So you're not getting sort of like Marilyn Robinson, William Faulkner experience from the prose, even though the prose are good. One of the things that maybe I don't like about the book is that it does reinforce the negative stereotype that anyone that plays role-playing games is like a weirdo, you know, or a loser or a freak in some way.
Hey guys, join our gang.
I just think that you know, we just really need to break this stereotype, and that's why you know, there's this thing called Read an RPG in Public Day, where it's the whole idea of, like, you go out and, like, you're not afraid to, like, I play role-playing games, and I care, and this is why on the podcast I talked about before, like, I don't understand why other people don't play more role-playing games, even if you don't like the fantasy elements of Dungeons & Dragons. There's all kinds of role-playing games for all kinds of people. And even in this movie that I had reviewed on the off-the-shelf blog before, Zero Charisma, that I really liked, this little independent movie about this nerd bully who was the game master for his role-playing game. You know, that movie, too, even though it was a love letter to gaming, definitely sort of reinforced the idea that if you're into gaming, you know, you're like a weirdo nerd that doesn't have any friends. And
that would be me.
And it was just like, you know, I just think that we need to transcend that a little bit. And it's a shame that anytime these things come up, they're sort of associated with these negative elements. I'll leave it at that. So, Crystal.
All right. Tickling my fancy this week is a new podcast I've been binge listening to called Serial. And that's S-E-R-I-A-L.
There's no Frosted Flakes episodes.
That's right.
I'm listening to the spinoff Serial.
Indeed. It's brought to you by the folks from This American Life. In fact, it's just like This American Life with a couple exceptions. Serial is podcast only, so you can't hear it on the radio. And it's one story that is slowly unfolding with each new episode. This first series of Serial will run for around 12 weeks, and we're halfway in at this point. So what's it about? Well, back in the winter of 1999, Hae Min Lee, a popular Baltimore high school senior, went missing and was later found buried in the local park. She'd been strangled. Her ex-boyfriend, Adnan Saeed, also a popular high school senior in Baltimore.
Did he play Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, man. I think he smoked a lot of weed.
And played Dungeons & Dragons. Right, right. I'm doing what I said not to do. I apologize.
So, Adnan, he was convicted of Hae's murder and sentenced to life in prison solely on the testimony of his friend Jay, whom he used to smoke a lot of weed with. Even though I've been tempted to look up this case online, I'm trying to stay spoiler-free. It's absolutely riveting, so check it out.
Oh, here's what happens. I remember this story.
It's so fascinating because they're both children of immigrant parents, so they're trying to struggle with what their parents, how the parents want them to behave, and yet they want to be regular kids. And
they end up being goth.
That's right. So, all right, Mike.
Greetings, boils and ghouls, to the final torture of my fancy segment of Shocktober. Alas, all bad things must come to an end. My luck with horror films this month has ranged from frightful to ghastly, if you know what I mean. But the standout this year is a Swedish film on YouTube, and it's officially, not pirated. That's only 2 minutes and 43 seconds, called Lights Out. I'll not spoil this fun-sized piece of terror. But I will say, do not worry, there's no spooky subtitles. It deals with universal fears that we all have. After this 3-minute interlude, I suggest going down to your house scare section of your local eerie emporium and invest in a nightlight. Books-wise, my favorite horror book this month would have to be Occult... We can't afford Foley work. Someone must actually be at the door. Who could that be? Door open. Oh no, it's the catalog I replaced all those years ago. 364.1523. That's the number for murder. I didn't murder anybody. You know the cops agreed with my story. You accidentally fell on my butcher knife 34 times before drowning in my bathtub. 177.3. Okay, so I may be lying. You didn't know what it was like all those years ago. I had to do horrible things just to survive. Grimy Johns and shady back alleys would force me every night to catalog their books. Wine manufacturing doesn't go with wine and cooking. It just doesn't. I couldn't take life on the streets anymore. No. No. Happy Halloween, listeners.
Corrections! Did anybody notice any mistakes last week's episode?
I thought we were flawless.
How about, we were flawless, except I didn't say
filled with flaws.
I didn't say the name of the show, the date. I didn't introduce or anyone else on the episode.
I noticed that. Yeah, towards the end, I was like, "We're never introduced. How do new listeners know who we are?"
So we were just floating in space. But you know, way to have my back, guys. All right. And Bill, you said the director of Seven was David Fichtner, but it's David Fincher, like Pincher, but with an F.
You lose.
And what new movie is out right now that's the hottest movie in the universe that he directed?
Gone Girl.
He directed Gone Girl, too.
I saw Gone Girl last night. I was surprised that Tyler Perry can actually act.
Yeah.
He was quite good as the attorney, wasn't he?
Yeah, his sister was great.
Yeah. I was surprised. She was. I never noticed how bad an actor Ben Affleck is. He is awful. He's like a piece of wood. They do, like, close-ups on him, and it's like he has no emotion ever. You know, I've seen more emotive.
Well, that was kind of the shallowness of the guy.
Yes.
That sort of actually plays into that?
Yeah, that's what I kind of got from that. He wasn't, you know.
They actually is supposed to be.
He was a ne'er-do-well.
Okay.
Good looking, kind of coasted on his looks. That's what I thought, you know.
Yeah. I guess that kind of goes into, like, you know, her choosing him. Okay.
I do think that a kind of an unknown actor I would have preferred in that role.
Yeah.
You know, just somebody talented and not like part of the Hollywood machine would have been.
I read that. I understood. I read between the lines of there what you meant. That's all the corrections, but for more information you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Org! And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Hey, next week's show, we're going to talk about legal thrillers in honor of Scott Turow being the Nashville Public Library Foundation Literary Award winner. Say that three times fast.
Get you someday.